At Parker, our purpose is simple. We want to make the world a better place. By working more efficiently, by using more sustainable practices, by developing better technologies, we keep moving forward. With each new idea, innovation, and partnership, we're one step closer to fulfilling our purpose every single day. To find out more, visit parker.com/purpose. Parker, engineering your success.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Deconstructed these walls and I found a
Welcome to the Deconstructionist Podcast. I'm your host, John Williamson, and this is a special bonus episode. Long time since we've done one of those. So I know a lot of you have been asking about the new theme music I've been using. It's from our dear friend, Clay Kirchenbauer, a.k.a. Forrest Clay. Clay literally has spent years working on this music, and it reflects his own spiritual journey in regards to some frustrations with the church, moments of sadness at how we treat our fellow humans. And he really puts words and music to a lot of things a lot of us have felt or are currently feeling about the state of Christianity, specifically in North America. So I sat down with Clay and we talked about each song on the EP. It's called the Recover EP, after which you'll hear a clip of each of those songs. We've never done anything quite like this before, so hopefully you all enjoy it. You can get the Recover EP anywhere music is sold and stream it in all the usual places. And at the end is a special treat. It's a brand new song. It's not on the EP, but it's a brand new song that just released called Child of War that you can also find anywhere you find your music. So without further ado, I give you Forrest Clay. Every single
week. And I gave you my money so that you would tell me what to.
All right. Welcome to the podcast, Clay. This is a special little bonus episode we're throwing out here.
Thank you so much for having me. It is a privilege to be to finally be a guest on my favorite podcast.
Well, it's cool. Well, yeah, we got to tell the backstory about how we even met in the first place. So I think, was it the first time we met in person, an actual person at the Science Mike event?
Yes. Yeah, it was. I talked to, I think, Adam on the phone after you guys used something, one of my earlier releases on the show, and we had talked on the phone for a while and found out that we were only 2 hours from each other. So, yeah, we went down and went to that show together, and after a very fun-filled evening, I, like a schoolboy, just asked, "Can we be friends, please?" And you guys were like, "That's not a weird thing to ask at all," but sure. And we've been friends ever since.
It definitely wouldn't be weird for Adam, because Adam's just like, yeah, I'll be friends with you. Sure. Oh, man. That's so funny. And I think I'm trying to remember the episode specifically, but I think if I remember correctly, was it Catherine? No.
Yes.
Yes.
From BioLogos.
That's
right.
Okay.
First time that was the first one, I believe.
Yeah, I remember that now. Okay, yeah. Mm-hmm. So this has been years ago. So this is going back probably, what, 3 to 4 years ago now?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
if not maybe even longer. So I'm just trying to figure out exactly when we started the podcast, and I think it was the end or beginning of 2016. I can't remember. Time is relative now, Clay, in pandemic times, but
absolutely
about 6 years ago or so. So yeah, so let's talk about this EP, because this has been a long time coming. You've been working on it for about 55 years.
Yeah, and feels like it.
No, but you have been working on it for a while. And mm-hmm. I remember one of the first times I heard some of these songs is when you came and performed before our Denver event several years ago now, and made a man covered in tattoos sob uncontrollably. He was an awesome guy, by the way. I think he was a former youth pastor or something like that, and really, really nice guy. But, I mean, absolutely hit home, because this EP in general, and talk about kind of the inspiration for it, but really is centered around deconstruction.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. And, you know, like many people my age who grew up in church, 2015 and 2016, I really started asking some questions. For me in particular, I had actual like theological questions. For me, it started with creation theology and kind of snowballed from there. But add on top of that, all the political happenings of 2014, 15, and 16, and watching the church kind of go the direction they did, made it so much more like tangibly real for me that... you know, the system that I was brought up in wasn't who they said they were. And so I just started writing songs about it.
Yeah. So as a musician, I imagine that's probably how that's your way to kind of, vent these things or process these things out is, you know, through your art.
Yeah, absolutely. And like personally for me, like I am, I'm someone, I don't know where this falls in my Enneagram number, but I'm like terrified of like conflict. Like I do really bad with conflict. And so writing and releasing music that say hard things is kind of like the way I can have a chance to articulate what I'm actually thinking and feeling outside of like that moment of conflict where my brain and just kind of shuts down and freezes up. You know what I mean? Like I can actually... articulate a thought and have time to craft it. And so this is for sure my outlet.
Yeah, that's brilliant, man. And a lot of these songs cover a lot of pretty heavy theological concepts or ideas that you're kind of wrestling with throughout the songs. And so we'll start going through these because you just released the EP. The EP is called the Recover EP. Mm-hmm. It's out everywhere. Good music is available. So what we'll do is obviously throughout the course of our conversation about these songs is after we finish discussing one, you'll get a chance to hear that song. And hopefully if you like it, go out and support Clay. So before we get into it, though, tell people a little bit about your musical background, too. You've been in the industry for some time now. And so talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, for sure. I came up, you know, in church singing and playing music, and knew pretty well through high school that that's what I wanted to do for a living. And so, therefore, was pretty terrible in school. And once I got out of school, a few years after I graduated high school, I started a band called The Undeserving, which you featured their music as well. Thank you very much. And very long story short, we signed a record deal with Warner Brothers. We were on Warner Brothers for maybe 4 or 5 years, and it was just an absolute disaster, honestly. But we got to do some amazing things. I always like to plug, I have a blog it's a pinned post on my Facebook page that tells kind of the whole story. That's like a 15 part blog. I really wrote it for me, but if other people want to read it, then that's great. And that just kind of tells my whole story of, my experience on a major record label. And, so we called it quits in 2012, mostly because we were just flat out broke and couldn't afford to go on tour or make new music or anything. And, I've just been kind of, releasing solo projects as often as I can afford to since then. And you know, I write a lot of songs, record even fewer, and release the ones that I can afford to. So that's kind of how how things go at this point. But yeah, so I've been doing it a long time and writing songs a long time.
Yeah, and it's kind of remarkable. I mean, in my various conversations with other musicians and folks who have, you know, been signed to various record labels and stuff like that, it's eye-opening to find out just how the industry works and just how difficult it is. No matter, it really has nothing to do with talent. It has everything to do with a lot of luck, a lot of being in the right place at the right time, you know, and just little things like the fact that, like, opening bands for larger bands oftentimes have to pay to even be on that tour, yep. much less make money. You know, you're lucky if you break even by the end of it. It's just remarkable.
Oh yeah, we lost money in all sorts of different kinds of ways. I can tell you a story very quickly. We did a festival. We didn't play a lot of Christian shows. We did not have a Christian deal. We had a mainstream deal, but we every now and then we would play like a festival or something like that. And we had a show in St. Louis. It was a big festival. I don't remember the name of it, but we had just put out our record that we made when we were on Warner Brothers, but we had to put it out independently, had spent our own money on production costs. And this would have been 2011. This was summer of 2011. And we were flat broke. And this was a huge crowd. Our manager was like, "Hey, you guys need to go. I'll pay for you guys to go play this show. It's a 5-song slot in between Stephen Curtis Chapman and Jeremy Camp. And you're going to, it'll be like maybe 8,000 to 10,000 people. And you get 5 songs and then you're going to sell tons of records. And it'll be like a little kickstart for your record release." So we go out, we drive the 10 hours. When I say we were flat broke, I mean, we were broke. We were like just scraping by. And so like just going out to St. Louis from Ohio, you know, gas in our big van and hotel room for the night, all stuff, like it all costs money, you know? And so we get out there. We go on right after Stephen Curtis Chapman, play our 5 songs. Everything goes great. All we have left to do is wait for Jeremy Camp to finish and for the masses to come to the merch tent. We got our merch table set up right between Jeremy Camp and Stephen Curtis Chapman. I mean, this is going to be like perfect. Well, a few songs into Jeremy Camp's set, gets a little breezy and starts to drizzle a little bit. And then we hear the sirens. And all of a sudden, it is like tornado warning. And we watch the crowds just like, I mean, they shut the show down and crowd just like dads with like lawn chairs in one hand and 2 kids in the other, just like running for the exits. And we're just sitting there in the merch tent going, "Oh no." And so sure enough, I mean, they shut the event down and everybody just left. And so we had to call. I remember we like basically just drew straws to who's going to call our manager. And because he was the one that forked over the several $1,000s for us to play. And he's like, "How many records did you sell?" And I was just like, 4. And he was very kind and gracious. We told him what happened. But it was just like that was a microcosm of our career, basically.
Just awful luck. Oh,
yeah,
man.
Terrible.
So, fast forward to a few years ago when you're starting to write this material. Mm-hmm. When you sit down to write a song, do you typically, because a lot of this is based on piano. Mm-hmm. So do you typically sit down at the piano to start crafting songs, guitar? Like, do the words come first or does the music come first?
For me, it's a lyrical idea that I match the musical production and melody with generally. So I'll have an idea that hits me. And then for this project, it's mostly piano, but I'll either figure out piano, guitar or whatever. And then, kind of try to, bring the song to life from that point on.
Very cool. And one of the things I thought was really, fascinating is to kind of see it. Cause you allowed Adam and I to kind of hear it in its rough stages. So I heard some of these demos like years ago, mm-hmm. and to hear them in their final, you know, realized version, with all the orchestrations and things added to it, I thought was, pretty cool to see, kind of the evolution of the song. So what made you decide to kind of have the base of it be on piano and then to add in some of those, you know, other effects after?
This is an unsatisfying answer, but cost. it's expensive to make a full production album. And so I just thought this material, it's a sad record. It's not something that is, there's no sugarcoating it. It's a record about, like leaving your home. And, it just felt like if there was a project that I could kind of get away with a more raw production, level, that this would be the one. And I think it worked out beautifully. So.
Absolutely. Yeah. I was going to say, I would have assumed that was the game plan from the beginning. I think, I've always been a big fan of kind of more stripped down, songs, like, and by that, I mean just like guitar, bass, drums, piano, you know?
Yeah.
Standard instruments. Like, I don't get me wrong, I love like the big overproduced stuff, you know, with the, you know, all the electronic music and gadgetry added to it. Like, I do love kind of an overproduced big full sound as well, but I think the songs that stand the test of time are typically the ones that are more stripped down, that you can't really nail down like when it was made per se. Like,
for sure.
And the example that I always give is like, you listen to some like old Beatles stuff, like especially like in the later half of their career, and it really stands the test of time versus like George Harrison's album that he made in the mid 80s. You know, it sounds right. Very 80s, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
So like, I think the stripped down stuff, I think as a result, like is more, I don't know. It's less, I think, I don't know what the way I'm trying to describe it, the word I'm looking for, but you know,
There's less to hide behind. Yeah, there's less to hide behind, you know? And so when you strip a song down, you get to really see the quality and the craftsmanship of the melody and lyric, you know? And those, you know, those are your bones to any song. And so that's something that I've always gone into any of my work in the forefront of my mind, is having that, like, the melody and lyric is the number one thing, you know? And making sure that those are authentic, honest, and done in a way that will, you know, capture people's attention as best I can do.
Yeah. I'm such a huge fan of good lyrics. You know, it's when done right, it reads like poetry, you know. And speaking of which, the lyrics on this EP are incredible, and I think a lot of people will identify with them. Which was the first song that really kind of came to fruition out of this EP?
I believe it was Recover, the title track. I was sitting kind of down in this in my basement here, which is where I do a lot of my writing, and that one's one that kind of came out in like 10 minutes, like the whole thing start to finish, in just a flood of tears. And I really I wrote it sometime in 2016, either, I don't know if it was before or after the election, but it was during all of that time. And, I just had this moment where like that this song was just kind of like my expression of pain, and just kind of watching everything that I thought I knew kind of unfold and unravel, you know, and which is a word that so many people have used. You know, it was an unraveling for me. But on top of that, watching the American church then inflict so much pain on so many people, you know, through politics and through, you know, a hunger for power. And so that's the song Recover, which it turned out to be the title track. And the last track on the record was the first one I wrote, and that kind of like kicked off all of it.
Yeah. And I mean, this one's like, I think out of all the songs, I mean, they're all pretty raw and brutally honest. I think this one probably the most, you know, it's really a critique of kind of your upbringing in the church, certainly. You know, the first couple of verses like really speak to that, and and kind of the almost commercialism that the church has really adopted. It's really become, in a lot of ways, at least in sort of Western Christianity, you know, you and Ab and I have had many discussions. We talk, you know, almost every other day, probably. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we've debated the merits of the mega church model and kind of the corporatization of the church. And obviously, I don't think any of us are overly huge fans of it. I mean, not to say that all mega churches are bad by any means. There's certainly the ability to do things as a mega church, obviously, and the ability to fundraise and things like that, that smaller churches couldn't do. But on the other hand, you know, obviously I think the attraction to staying alive and making money and putting butts in seats kind of tends to take over at that point, you know, and that's where things tend to kind of veer off the tracks. And I think you talk a lot about that, you know, in this song. One of my favorite verses in it, I think, is I sat myself in your pew every single week and I gave you my money so you could tell me what to think. Mm-hmm. You know, it goes back to the whole belief by proxy thing. And I always love that lyric.
Yeah. It's so common that in the church that we don't teach people how to think at all. You know, we don't teach people logic and reason, and so much of even like church history is filled with half truths and important parts of the story left out. Like when I found Pete Enns, he was life changing for me. And so many of your guests on your podcast, especially the real nerdy Bible ones, man, because it's so much of that was things I had just never heard before. And yeah, that changed and reshaped what I thought of the Bible. And then once you kind of get that information, you're like, oh my goodness, there's so much value in this. And it changes and it shapes the way you think about everything. It's your whole worldview that tends to shift when it has been based on like kind of a single interpretation of scripture. And then it just unraveling is what happens.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So talk about the opening track on the EP. It's probably one of the more hopeful ones. Let me take that back. Mm-hmm. Almost all of your songs, despite the fact that they talk about something that's very hard to discuss and talk about and go through, certainly, almost all of your songs do have like a tinge of hope in them. Like, this can be better. Like, you're hopeful, obviously, that things can improve, like through conversations like this.
For sure. Yeah, so the first track is called Burning Bush, and it was inspired by a blog that Jonathan Martin had written about how he kind of took the story of the burning bush and kind of, you know, revisioned it in a sense that so many of us are leaving the tribe of our parents and that we kind of have a calling that is similar to a calling that our parents may have felt. But it's like a calling in another direction. And so this originally was going to be towards the end of the EP. And then we kind of decided that it worked best as the opening track, because it's only like a minute long. And it worked best at the beginning, because in a sense, that is what I went through, kind of whether or not I was realizing it or not. It was like I had this burning bush moment, you know, the minute I started writing Recover, that these are things that I need to say. These are things that need to be said, and that so it just kind of worked as this opening track.
There's a light on the hill from a bush that's burning, and it's where only I can see. It's not the same as the flame of my father's, but I think it's calling to me. I think it's calling to me.
Yeah, it's a beautiful song. I think that one and the second song that we'll talk about here, This Water I Am Treading, were the only two tracks I think I hadn't heard in an earlier version. So it was cool. It was fun to listen to those for the first time. So talk about the second track, This Water I Am Treading. You know, it's kind of this this song about like kind of feeling hopeless and helpless and but at the same time kind of grounding yourself and something you can hang on to, which is love.
Right. Yeah. So this is a song that my brother and I wrote. My brother actually started the song, gosh, like 7 or 8 years ago. And oddly enough, I was going through some old YouTube videos yesterday and of his, and his original demo of it was in the background of this YouTube video. And I thought it was so funny. And, and what we did is we kind of revisited the song. We always wanted to put it out in some way. And just didn't have a place for it. And this EP just felt like the place for it. But it absolutely, it's about the moment that you come to the realization that like, it's all crumbling and you just feel helpless and hopeless and you just feel this is probably the saddest song on the record. Right. And at the end, you're right. We tie it into like, there's still love. We can still love each other. We can still, make the places and the people around us, you know, better. And so, but it is a song that's just really, about those first few, like days and months where you just feel like there's no hope in sight and that you don't know where to go from here.
To my surprise, I can't accept that it was all just a lie. Do you believe in hope? Because I am hopeless. Do you
At Parker, our purpose is simple. We want to make the world a better place. By working more efficiently, by using more sustainable practices, by developing better technologies, we keep moving forward. With each new idea, innovation, and partnership, we're one step closer to fulfilling our purpose every single day. To find out more, visit parker.com/purpose. Parker, engineering your success.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Yeah, great, great track, man. Moving on to the next song, this is one of my favorites. And this is one I got to hear in its early stages. So I loved what you did in the first couple verses here, because I did notice that you talk about, first of all, the song is called Does God. And in the first verse, you talk about, you know, you're just kind of asking questions like, does God have a face? You know, does God have a body or even a name? You know, and then you say he at the beginning, and then you switch in the middle of the verse to she, which I thought was awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. Obviously, so that was intentional, right?
It was intentional for sure. Yeah. This is the last track that I wrote. This is the last track I wrote for the EP. This one took a while. But I think for me, it was kind of one of the rare ones where like I feel like this is, I'll say this. It's my favorite song I've ever written. It is not one that took 20 minutes, which are generally, like, I feel like the best songs I write. This one took like 8 months to really craft. Like, the first 75% came out immediately, and then that last 25% was just really kind of getting it nailed down. And there was so much I wanted to say about, like, you know, God's gender was one. And I wanted to keep the song about, yes, the question, it's called Does God, the question of, like, does God, are all these things that we learned about God true? But also, if there's one thing I can hang on to, or there's one, let's say, let's call it doctrine that I still love, is that we are still made in the image of God. Now, you can, you know, quote unquote, deconstruct that doctrine and that idea and learn the history of it and all that kind of thing. But it's, there's something about it that is beautiful on its own, is that each person and each living thing, you know, has this like divine spark to it. And so what I wanted to do was take that idea and at the same time that I kind of reaffirm that idea, I also wanted to flip it on its head and say, you know, even at the end, I used the word, they, them for God as well. And I wanted to include that. And I wanted to give, every person that I could think of and have time to include, you know, that people that haven't been included, that yes, you too are made in the image of God. And so, yeah, this is for sure one that I think I'm most proud of.
Yeah, you should be, man. It's a great track. Yeah, I love that one. And the other one I love is the one right after that, of course, O Church. Mm-hmm. And I believe, I'm trying to think, it was either this one or You Must Go, which we'll talk about here in a second, that, mm-hmm. that made our friend cry. But
yeah.
It really could have been any of them. But so talk about O Church, because O Church is really the one that I was kind of referencing earlier. That's really a critique of what the church as a physical building has seemed to become over the years.
Yeah. And this one was probably the hardest one to write. This one for sure, I wrote like the night after the election, in 2016, this was like that night. And it was kind of like, okay, this is that realization that it, my worst fears were coming true. You know what I mean? And it wasn't even about like who got elected and who didn't. It was about the spirit in which I felt like the church had taken, that, demonized people that didn't deserve to be demonized, and it uplifted people that certainly, for me, were the opposite of the Jesus that I grew up learning about, and the harm that that caused. And so O Church, when I actually first wrote it, all of the, I guess the pronouns I used were like you, for I kind of separated myself from the church. So like the first line is, oh church, when did we lose our way? And when I first wrote it, those were all yous. And so I wrote it from like the out, as an outsider. And then after sitting with it for about a year, I decided that I needed to examine how I played a part in all of those, and all the things that the church did. And it felt it felt way less vindictive if I included myself and I changed those words to we. And I think it works a lot better that way, because it, like I said, it's less vindictive and it's more taking ownership and taking responsibility for the part that I played, for sure.
No church, when will we ever see, until we're all treated the same, that nobody is actually free? Oh church,
absolutely. So was it intentional to place You Must Go towards the end? But, you know, like, tell me a little bit about, like, what the thought process was behind the order in which you kind of placed the songs.
Yeah. So initially, up until like a month before release, I had the order completely opposite. I had Does God was the last track. I almost had them in the order that I wrote them. And once kind of I sat back and examined it, my friend Tom, who produced it, he was like, you really need to think about changing the order of this EP. One, there was some like logistical reasons for it. You know, tempos of songs, and you wanted to kind of keep, you know, you didn't want to put like the two slow piano ballads next to each other, et cetera, that kind of thing. And so we did, there was some of that, but then once we started analyzing, like I said earlier, how Burning Bush really seemed to like want to be that opening track. And then kind of track three is always like, you know, what you call your power track. Like that's the one that you want. Like you've gotten two songs in and now this is like the big one. And that's, we just felt like Does God Belong There? And then to close the album, we felt like Recover may still be the strongest track on the album. And so You Must Go and Recover felt like they just needed to be together. They just needed to be like, they just flowed one right into the next one. And so You Must Go at track five just felt like the prequel to Recover. You know what I mean? It was like, so You Must Go was a song I actually wrote after Recover. And it was, I actually had gone to a liturgist gathering in 2016 sometime, in 2017 maybe. And I had kind of prepared myself for the being able to like meet a whole bunch of people that had gone through similar things as me. And once I got there, it kind of turned into this like room full of people that had experienced pain and from the church and pain far worse than I had experienced. And so it became obvious to me very quickly, like that I just need to shut up and listen right now. And so these stories in You Must Go, You Must Go is a story. It's about three different characters who experience pain in the church in different ways. And two of them were, two of the stories kind of came from that weekend. And one of the stories, is kind of my own. And so, it just felt like that song belonged kind of with Recover, and those two needed to be together.
Yeah. This one, I think it is so powerful in through the vehicle of, as you said, telling these different individual stories. Like each, as you said, each verse is a story about a different individual who suffered at the hands of, unfortunately, the church. And man, the ending though, like, because it's very sad throughout, you know. Mm-hmm. But the ending is really uplifting, you know. So talk about, like, because I'm sure the first few verses came out, and then you're trying to probably figure out how to wrap this song up, and you could have ended it just as is, and it would have been a very, very sad song, but truthful and honest. Sure. And a reflection on how we should absolutely need to be better to our brothers and sisters who don't quite fit in what we consider, you know, I don't know, the mainstream per se, mm-hmm. but like what Jesus, the types of folks that Jesus would have absolutely said, like, these are the people that you need to welcome in with open arms, you know, the people on the outside, the people on the fringe, you know, the, right. the minority and the refugee and the poor and the, you know, sick and yeah. the marginalized. So how did you come up with, what was the process for coming up with the ending? Cause the ending is really uplifting. It's this beautiful thing and it really tugs at your heartstrings. I mean, I remember the first time you sent it to me, I played it. I was sitting in bed one night and I turned to my, at the time, wife. And I was like, oh my gosh, you have to hear this song. This is heavy. And I played it for her. And I mean, we were both just like, damn, like that's some truth right there. So yeah. So how did you come up with the ending? Cause it is uplifting.
Yeah. So, you know, spoiler, the ending is just this idea that the three characters are out now on their own, but they all hear, you know, essentially the voice of Jesus, and that he kind of like affirms them. And I think I needed to put that in there because I felt that. And I don't really know when in my whole process, but I felt so drawn still to the character of Jesus. And so, you know, there's this video going around this week of a certain megachurch pastor kind of demonizing people who deconstruct. And the thing that just like, that always gets misrepresented is that like, nobody who deconstructs is deconstructing the love of Jesus. You may deconstruct like the story of Jesus and whether or not it happened. You can deconstruct the authenticity of Scripture. You can deconstruct all of those things. But like the actual character of Jesus, of one who affirms everyone on the outside, that is something that sticks with me now, even though I've thought through all of those things I just mentioned and had my views shift, and they continue to shift and change. And so I just thought like that love and that grace and that healing, is something that is real and tangible, and that I have to figure out a way to like, the song wouldn't be complete without that. You know what I mean? And also that I think that the church's only chance for like recovery and relevancy is to listen to the people on the margins and to turn over their power to the people on the margins. And that is how I wanted to finish the song.
John was young and driven with a heart of gold. Finished seminary, married, found a church he could call home. Made a living, giving dying folks a shoulder and a hand. Until he told his leaders that he had some feelings for another man. And they said, John, you must go and take your broken heart and
really speaks, puts words, puts into song a lot of thoughts that I've had since Adam and I started this project almost 6 years ago now, or 6 years ago, whatever it was. Long time. We're old school now, apparently. We're the OGs. Just weird to say. There's a lot of new ones out there, but we're old school. But yeah, it really puts into music and puts into this beautiful story things that I thought for a long time. I think you put it so well. Like, I've never had an issue with Jesus or any of Jesus' teachings. I think it's probably the best way to live, you know?
Yeah.
You should love other people, love yourself, you know, and selfless love too, you know, love without strings attached. Mm-hmm. And that's a difficult thing to do sometimes. But that's part of the challenge, right? And so I've never had a problem with that. What I have had an issue with is some of the church doctrine that once you start digging, you can't unsee the fact that a lot of these things that we take as, you know, fact is not, in fact, the way that the early church viewed certain things, you know, and you can get in all sorts of things like atonement theory and views on hell and heaven and the afterlife and all sorts of things. And those are the types of things that I think most people, yourself included, myself included, really have been struggling with over the years. And not even struggling with at this point. I can't even say I'm necessarily struggling with anything. I'm just in a different place.
Yeah,
I've just evolved to a different place.
Yep.
And, you know, I've taken more ownership over my own faith. And yes, my beliefs have changed a little bit, but it's all been based out of, you know, just wanting to know more and learn more and see how the original church kind of viewed, you know, even the Bible, you know, for example, right. And like how they read it and
yeah.
Things that they may have taken literally and other parts that they may not have taken literally. And like, how did they view this? What did this mean to them? What did these stories mean to them?
For sure.
And so like, if anything, you know, we get accused as folks who have gone through deconstruction as folks who take things less seriously. You know, you don't take the Bible seriously. No, I take it more seriously to the point where I have done an absurd amount of research into it and talked to people far smarter than myself who have spent lifetime studying it, you know, just because I take it so seriously.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I appreciate you, you know, putting into words and into song what so many of us probably have felt for a very long time. So well done, Mr. Clay.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Yeah. Any other last words? Because I know we kind of started off with the Recover at the top, even though it's the last song. So any last thoughts on anything else you'd like people to know about this project?
Well, you know, it's a labor of love. My producer and good friend, Tom Daugherty, and my other good friend, Mark Evitz, who did all the string work on it. Like, they wouldn't have been possible without the two of them, who worked really hard on it. And, it just would not be possible without those two guys. And, you know, other than that, man, I would just say that, one, I appreciate everyone who's already kind of listened, and we did a Kickstarter campaign for it to get it off the ground, and that was successful. And I had just like, I mean, I didn't even expect it to make it, you know, and it did. And so thank you to everyone who supported there. So many people have reached out to me from hearing my music on your podcast. And so thank you for promoting it always. So yeah, I think we covered everything on the record, but I would just say I'm honored and privileged to kind of be able to share it. And I just hope that, you know, I hope that people enjoy it and it can do some good reckon.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think now is probably a good time to mention the fact also that I probably should have mentioned this up top, but you may have noticed if you've been listening to the podcast for a while that typically we got into the rhythm years ago of using a different artist on every episode, which is fun and exciting, but also very time consuming for me because I have to reach out to a ton of different artists trying to beg for permission to use their awesome music. And that takes up a ton of time. And also, like, there just wasn't really anything that existed out there from a thematic standpoint that really fit as, like, sort of more so permanent theme music until now. And so you may have noticed that on the last several episodes, we have had theme music for really the first time. And so so Clay has graciously allowed us to use some of his songs off this EP to use as our now go forward kind of theme music. So thank you for that as well.
Man, my pleasure. I'm honored. So I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Well, thanks for coming on, Clay. This is a lot of fun. And folks, go out, grab Clay's music. Where can they find it? What's the best place to get it that puts the most amount of money in the artist's pocket? Let's go there.
Sure. Bandcamp, if you want to just buy the buy the files. You can also order a hard copy if you would like a hard copy. I did get a very small number of those. I'll send you one, John.
Sweet.
I did get a very small run of those made. So I do have a handful of hard copies left. And so Bandcamp, you can find me there under Forest Clay. Yes, my last name is Kirchenbauer, but it's too hard to spell. And that was your idea, John, to make me change my artist name because I was at your house and you said, Clay, you got to change your artist name because I can't ever find your music because I can't spell Kirchenbauer. And I said, you know what? You know what? You're right. I need to change my artist name. So my artist name is, it's now Forest Clay, which is just my first name. So, Forest Clay on indie streaming service. You'll find all my stuff on Bandcamp. I just launched a TikTok. If you're on TikTok, I'm going to be playing a lot of these songs live on TikTok. You can find me there as well. So, yeah, all the socials, and then I'm at Clay_K on Twitter.
Perfect.
Yep.
Well, thanks again, man. We'll have, like I said, you will have heard all the songs that we discussed throughout the episode. So go out and support Clay if you can, and we'll be back in the very near future with new content. Thanks a lot, Clay.
Awesome. Thanks for having me.
Brought you home on a Thursday. Your daddy took off work to hold you close. You were loved. Your mama ran a little grocery, and your daddy wore a hat of white, saving lives. The tension was high. You saw fear in their eyes as the terror from heaven rained down. Child, the only hope for to is to find your mama on the other side. No more bombs to drown her.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
Save big money at Menards. Gorilla tapes, glues, and adhesives are perfect for jobs around the house, indoors and out. Gorilla Heavy Duty Construction Adhesive has a 100% waterproof formula that provides a secure bond on any surface. From trim work to landscape block to hanging mirrors, it's all-purpose and holds in 30 seconds. Pick it up for your project and head to Menards.com to see all of our great deals going on now.
Save big money.